Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED. Hey everyone, from KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown, and I'm Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer, and today on The Breakdown, we have the man challenging Governor Gavin Newsom to lead the Golden State.
That's right, we are very excited to have Senator Brian Daly with us. He is on the ballot for governor this November, and he served in the state legislature for about a decade. We're going to bring him in just a few minutes to talk about his life and vision for California. But first, the election is heating up, Scott. We're seeing more and more advertisements out there.
Some polls.
So before we get into the poll and some of the nitty gritty, you might have seen the current governor on your TV at home or on other screens railing against Prop 30.
Yeah, not for himself, actually, but well, kind of for himself in a way, but really about Prop 30, which would raise income taxes on those earning $2 million a year and more. And the money would be used to help kind of get the state to its goals on electric vehicles and carbon emissions, also raise some money for wildfires. And you'd think that's kind of a no-brainer because those are two of the governor's big priorities, but he's against it, along with the teachers union and others.
Wait. We got to, like, lay out these strange bedfellows. Howard Jarvis taxpayers, the Chamber of Commerce,
Republican
Gavin
Party,
Newsom,
Republican
and the CTA
Party.
Walk into a bar.
He finally finally found something he agrees with the Republican Party on.
And the Taxpayers
and
Association,
the Taxpayers
which
Association.
Is maybe even a bigger lead. You know?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, part of it, I mean, let's everything that the governor does these days, I think we look at in part through this national prism as he keeps kind of dipping his toe into Florida and Texas and other things. And you got to, you know, looking at it from that lens, I mean, the state has a huge surplus or did. And, you know, raising taxes when you've got that much money and you're giving money back to taxpayers already doesn't look so good. The optics of that aren't good. And of course, teachers didn't like it or don't like it because it would take money away from that Prop 98 funding formula for schools. They want it to go into the general fund. So on some level, it makes sense. But yeah, you're right. Strange bedfellows for sure.
Yeah. And I think this is an interesting one from a policy perspective for him to argue against, because it is to fund this electric vehicle infrastructure that the state needs if they're going to get to the goals that he is supporting and in some cases put forward. And he is sort of framing this as a giveaway to Lyft because rideshare companies have been ordered to really increase the amount of electric vehicles in their fleets. But yeah, it'll be kind of interesting to see what cuts through the noise. It does seem from polling, which we're about to get to, that it's in a pretty strong position and less so when Newsom weighs in. So
yeah,
we'll
exactly.
See. But PPIC put out a poll this week. It shows Newsom ahead 58-31 over our soon to be introduced guest, Brian Daly. Not a huge surprise there. Those are pretty similar numbers to some other polls. I was really interested by Proposition 1. This is the constitutional amendment to enshrine abortion and contraception access in the state constitution. It's leading 69-25. And when you dig down, I mean, Democrats and independents, very strong support. About 33% of Republicans say they're going to support it. But in competitive congressional districts, they say it's 70% favored, which I think is a really interesting question for people.
It's always
like
a little tricky to, yeah, it's a little tricky sometimes to do the polling in those really small districts. But, you know, that is really what Democrats are hoping for. They want to run on this issue.
Right.
Obviously, in California, it does well. And they'll be pleased to know that it does well in some of those competitive districts because, you know, I think if the Democrats are going to hold on to the House, which is a big if, you know, they're going to have to pick up, they're going to have to flip some seats here in California. And there, you know, there are two or three where that could happen.
Yeah. And I mean, I do think that this is an issue. I would venture to gather that if this had been a question on the ballot without the Dobbs Supreme Court decision, without Roe v. Wade being overturned, it would not necessarily have that level of support among Republicans and independents. We have seen since the last UC Berkeley poll, which showed a slightly higher number of Republicans supporting it, some of those undecideds going, it seems, towards the no side. But this is really something that I think We all knew it was coming, but everyone was surprised by it.
Well, I think also they got a boost unexpectedly from Senator Lindsey Graham this week, who announced that he wanted to push some legislation that would create a nationwide ban on abortion after 15 weeks, with some exceptions. And so I think that was certainly something that the Democrats were happy to hear about, because it took attention away from those inflation numbers that came out yesterday as well. So a little bit of a mixed message there coming out of the Republican Party on this issue. Maybe we'll talk with our guest about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that all the oxygen in the room so far has really been made up by these ballot measures 26 and 27 on gaming. And I do wonder, before we go to break, if that backfires on folks who want to legalize more sports betting, because people do get over saturated with things.
Absolutely.
And start tuning it out and getting hostile.
Well, and often, when there are two competing ballot measures and people get confused, people just say no to both of them. 26
right.
is being supported by the tribes, by and large, 27 by the gaming industry, both sides have spent already over $400 million. Yeah. This particular Prop 27, the spending on that has already broken a record. And yet, in that poll, support for that measure is not so great, right? It's looking for the number in front of me. I don't have it, but it was trailing pretty significantly. And I do think that there is a point where people are tired of hearing about it, and they just say, they tune out.
They tune out. Yeah, don't tune out us. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be joined by
34 yes.
Yeah. He comes
54
in.
54 no. I just found it.
All right. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be joined by State Senator and gubernatorial candidate Brian Daly. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I am Marisa Lagos, here with Scott Schaefer. And we are thrilled to welcome Senator Brian Daly. Welcome to The Breakdown.
Hello.
Hi, Marisa, Scott. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so we are really excited to talk about your biography and life. And we want to start at the beginning, before you were even here. You come from a farming family, and we were reading that your grandfather, a World War I veteran, was granted a homestead in Tule Lake in 1930. And I understand there's a pickle jar involved in this family lore. Tell us about that.
Well, my grandfather came to California looking for work in 1929 during the Great Depression, found out that they were actually giving land grants out to veterans, and basically put his name in a pickle jar. They drew his name out. We had a 80-acre homestead in Tule Lake, California. It's 4 miles from the Oregon border, way north. He bought some land in 1942 in Lassen County, where I reside today, and continue to farm those lands. So we've been in California for 92 years farming. I continue to farm today. We do cereal grains for seed, wheat, barley, oats, rye, peas, 95% certified organic, and that's what we do for a living. So.
I'm curious, a lot of people became Democrats because of FDR. Did your family go that way? You're obviously a Republican, but going way back, were there some Democrats in there?
I never actually got to meet my grandfather. He passed away before I was born, but I know a lot about him. He was a very awesome human being. I don't know, but I do know this. I have a copy of the actual deed with all the crops he raised to pay the taxes. You have to pay taxes for 5 years, build a home on the land. And I have that in my office with Franklin Roosevelt's signature. 5 years later, he signed the deed. So it's a very awesome story. It's a California story. And that's quite frankly why I'm running for governor. I'm not leaving California. A lot of my neighbors and friends are leaving. I'm here to fight. As you probably know, I served 16 years on the Lassen County Board of Supervisors before I came to the legislature. So I've been elected 26 years fighting for private property rights for, you know, California, the California dream. I want people to have the same opportunities that my grandfather had, my dad and myself and my children, quite frankly. And the dream is really dim right now. I'll just say that with the current administration and 25 years of one party control in California.
Going back to your childhood, I believe you guys still have the family homestead, but as you said, you've brought property further south and you grew up in a farm family as well. Can you just tell us a little bit about what your childhood was like? I know you've talked about your dad's struggles with alcohol in the past.
Yeah, so my dad had addiction issues. He was alcoholic. My dad was passed out every night on the couch until I was in seventh grade. And my mom separated from my dad and learned about alcoholism. If you remember, Betty Ford came out at the time and said alcoholism is a disease. My mom, an awesome lady, still alive to this day, went and learned about alcoholism, got my dad in a treatment program. They weren't available in the North. Yeah. She took him all the way to Pasadena, California, and he went through a treatment program and was sober for the rest of his life until he passed away. It changed my life, and it changed our family because he made the right choice.
How did it change your life? What do you mean?
Well, because my dad became a dad, and he took care of his family at that point. And he wasn't, damaging himself along with his marriage and his family. So he did what he needed to do. He needed to be a father and a better farmer, obviously, because he was he wasn't addicted. And so it really changed my life. I saw what needs to happen. I believe that's the biggest challenge we have with homelessness is addiction issues. 99% of the people on the streets have addiction issues. It leads to mental health issues. And those are the things that I want to focus on as a governor of California, because if you can turn that corner and change your addiction issues, you have an opportunity to change your life and you can have upward mobility and you can move up the and take care of yourself.
Yeah. I mean, and so many people have that experience in their families. So you did not go to college. You said you couldn't afford it and you worked a series of jobs before you came back to farming. Tell us just a little bit about the various dabbling you did in different, I feel like a lot of different industries, really.
Yeah, so I actually tried to farm when I first got out of high school and I didn't make money. So I went to work in a lumber mill. So I worked in a lumber mill to pay off my debts from my farming adventure. I worked construction throughout the state. I built hydroelectric plants, so energy producing plants. I built reservoirs and roads and that kind of did construction. I had a statewide blasting license. I used to do quarry work and I had a license for the state of California to make crushed rock. And then, started back in the farming when I was about 27 years old. I started my seed business. I ran for office when I was 29. And so that's kind of the future behind me. I married my wife.
Wait, there's a good story, I think, on how you proposed to her.
Yeah. So I met Megan actually when I was on the campaign trail for a supervisor, my first race. And it ended up dating her for four years, I think it was. And then got married.
That right.
She's 10 years younger than I am. We've been married 23 years. We have three beautiful children. We have two sons, Chase and Reagan, and we have a daughter, Roslyn. Roslyn came 10 years after the boys. So we have, she's, in fact, tonight we have a volleyball game, her first volleyball game we'll be attending tonight here in Sacramento. Nice. I proposed to Megan at the Board of Supervisors meeting. I was the chair. And I remember I got down on one knee and I told the clerk, if she says yes, record it. If she says no, please don't record it. And I have an awesome wife. She serves in the legislature as well.
Right.
She took my place in the assembly. And so we both are serving here at the state legislature in California.
I want to ask you about your kids because your son, as you said, named Reagan. I'm wondering if it was after the former president, but your daughter Rosalynn, I mean, that was the first lady's name, Rosalynn Carter. Is that a coincidence?
No, we didn't plan any of that. Actually, my son Reagan has a middle name of Taft, which is another president's name, but that's my brother's name. And so we named our oldest son Chase. His middle name's Garrett after my wife's brother. And then we named Reagan after my brother Taft. So just family names. We didn't choose Reagan because of Ronald Reagan or Rosalynn. We put a lot of thought into their names. Rosalynn means beautiful rose, and she is. Reagan means ruler and strong. He is very strong. And Chase means hunter. And he likes to hunt on our property up north. So the names actually go with the what they do. And Chase is running our farm.
I was going to ask about that, like, because you guys have been in Sacramento serving in the legislature. So
yeah,
he's running the show.
Yeah. So both the boys went to Cal Poly San Luis. Chase needs to have about a half a semester to complete his crop science degree. Reagan went there for a little bit during COVID, wasn't really a great fit. So he's here in Sacramento going to William Jessup, but he's taking a semester off to work with me on the campaign. But Chase, yes, is running our farm. We had about 1,000 acres of cereal grains in this year. So he's taking care of all of our business. We have wonderful employees that are also like, hey, just go do what you need to do and we'll take care of your business. They are. It's awesome. We have an awesome community too. It's a small community. People are coming alongside us there as well and helping out.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos. And today we've got Senator Brian Daly. He's running for governor of California. I know that when you were in the legislature, well, you're still in the legislature, but at one point you and your wife invited about 100 lawmakers to the farm to educate them about ag issues. How many came? What was that like?
When I first came to the legislature, I sent an email out to every office and invited them to come to my district. You know, most legislators have not been past Sacramento North. And I had 127 legislators to our district over the 10 years. The majority of them, obviously, Democrats. We built relationships. And I also asked to go to their districts as in return. I would pay my way. If they would come to my district, I would pay their way. If they'll invite me to their district, I would pay my way to come to their districts. And I did. Anthony Rendon was one of the first members. We came in together. He's now the speaker. We are really good friends. I went to his district, looked at his issues. I've been with Reggie Jones Sawyer in Compton. He's also been to my district. And so, you know, you can really get a lot of things done when you build a relationship, break bread with each other, and talk about the things that you agree on more than the things you disagree on. I'm on the Boys and Men of Color committee with Reggie Jones Sawyer. I have Native American young men. It's the highest suicide rate in our state, 18 to 25. He has young Black men in his community that are faced with some of the similar issues. So we work on those issues together. We disagree on crime issues a lot, but there's places where we can work together. So I try to focus on the things we can work on to get things done. You know, obviously I'm a Republican and it's a majority of Democrats. My whole elected career, it's been that way here in California. But I've figured out a way to get things done and that are good for my district and good for California. And I educated them a lot on fire. As you know, we are burning down and we can fix that. We just need to thin our forest and get it in a place where fire can go through our forest without killing our forest off and emitting carbon.
What kind of questions did they ask? Like, were there some things that you're like, roll your eyes a little bit? Oh, my gosh, can't believe they're asking.
I think the main thing to take away from most of the trips was it's a very beautiful area. It's very wide open. We don't have cell service coverage everywhere. And so that was a big challenge, which was actually to my advantage.
I was going
to
say that's probably a good thing.
Right. They can't look at their phone and I have their captive an audience when they're up there. But they were surprised I was elected from such a small community. I mean, Beaver has a population of like 270. The closest Walmart is 75 miles from my home. The closest Costco is 110 miles. But I've been an outlier a lot in elections, and I continue to win. And so I know that this race is the same, that I'm from Northern California. Even though I represent 1 million people, this is a tough race. But California needs something better, and I'm going to give them the opportunity of choice.
Well, let's talk about some policy issues because you are running to run the state. You brought up fires, and I think that's a great segue into climate change and the sort of debate in the state over how to tackle the extreme weather we're seeing. We're coming, you know, off of this heat wave. It was very dangerous. I know you've opposed a lot of bills aimed at cutting emissions and talked about Air Resource Board mandates really being a challenge, especially in agriculture. What's the balance that you see? Because to your point, your district is also disproportionately affected by a lot of the fires and extreme weather that we are seeing.
And gas prices, too.
Well, yeah.
So I think the biggest difference between my philosophy and Gavin Newsom and many in his party is that California produces 1% of the world's greenhouse gases, 1%. But we are the fifth largest economy in the world. So when you're the fifth largest economy, you use a lot of resources. You use concrete. We build. We do all those things come from somewhere, and there's an emission attached to those. So my philosophy is California has the most stringent environmental laws. So if we produce those materials in California and put Californians to work, we're actually reducing carbon more because we're doing it in a more environmental friendly way. Now, Gavin Newsom and a lot of elitist Democrats, their policy is we just don't want it here. So that those jobs and those products are outsourced to countries like China, where they don't have any regulatory laws, and they're building coal-fired power plants to build those commodities that we need. And so my goal is to do it in California. Let's build those things. Let's use our oil in California versus shipping oil in from Ecuador, destroying the rainforest and not helping the environment. Because it's really a global situation. It's not just a California situation. So that's really the major difference between what I think needs to happen in the environment. And I think we can do it better. I think we can actually reduce carbon a lot more by producing the things that we need in California here. And we have all those resources. We have gravel, and we have concrete, and we have lithium, and we have all those things here that we need to transform our economy in a positive way. And at the same time, we'll put Californians to work. It'll make California a more prosperous state, and we will reduce carbon twice as fast. The other thing I want to mention, we talk about forest fire, is the biggest emitter of carbon in the world is forest fire. It's not combustible engines, but we don't even count forest fires in California, which are the biggest emitter. I did a bill 2 years ago to actually say we're going to count the emissions from forest fires. So we have all the information in one spot, and that bill didn't get out of the state Senate because they just, quite frankly, don't want to count it. They want to regulate combustible engines. When I think we should be focusing not just on combustible engines. That's obviously part of the problem. But a bigger part of the problem is forest fire, and we can reduce those emissions by thinning our forest and taking that product out and securing that carbon in a way that makes California a real leader in the climate change fight.
I want to ask you about abortion. We talked about the polling on Prop 1, very much supported, including a fair amount of support from Republicans and independent voters. I think you've described yourself as pro-life. Describe, though, how would that affect the way you govern? Yes, we have a Democratic legislature now that wouldn't let you, try to, rein that in at all. But what would you like to do? Like, what would be the best policy for California from your perspective?
Well, I am frustrated, as you just heard. I mean, I've been a Republican in California. I am pro-life. That's no secret. But California's law right now that we have on the books, which will not change whether Prop 1 passes or fails, it'll actually change if it passes. But it's up to 6 months that a woman can choose. And then after that, it's if there's a high-risk pregnancy. So that's the law in California today. And that's not something that is changed. What Prop 1 actually does is expand that law to any time. There's no definition of when you can have an abortion. So it can be a late term. There's no definition in there. So for me, that's the issue of Prop 1, and it's on the ballot. So Californians are going to make that decision. I'm going to be voting against it, and we'll see what happens. And then the future of California is after November 8th and see where we come out with that. But if it fails, we're still with what we have on the books as a law of 6 months. So in California, it's really a matter of expanding abortion through Prop 1 more than it is anything else. The right is still there.
But you do not support that, right? And the majority of Californians do. And I think that people, you're asking people to potentially cross party lines or independents to support you. Like, what is your message to people who say, I support safe, legal access to abortion, and I'm worried that you would try to undercut that?
Well, I think that's the issue, is that there is no ability unless the legislature does something. And we'll have that opportunity after November 8th to see if that happens. So I ask Californians this, is this the biggest number one priority? We have 40% higher murder rate in the last 2 years. We have highest inflation. We have a lot of things that are happening in California. And this bill was put up so it would drive up the election. This is trying to get folks out to vote on an issue. And Gavin Newsom used it very effectively. He's talking today about putting billboards up and making California a sanctuary state where Californians will be paying for folks that don't live in our state for an abortion. So that's really what this is about. The law will be the same that it is if it fails, but it will expand abortion, and I'm opposed to that.
I want to ask you about a bill that's on the governor's desk that would make it easier for farm workers to unionize. He's getting pressure from President Biden to sign it and Nancy Pelosi. He seems to be reluctant. He's vetoed something similar. What's your position? Is this an area that you agree with the governor on? You think that's a bad bill?
Yeah, I do think. I voted against the bill. I think it's where people are happy. I was just toured. I toured a pistachio plant yesterday in Tulare when I had an event down there. We went and looked at this awesome facility that has about 1,000 workers. And they actually tried to unionize that. And it was a 95% rejection of unionizing. They love their job. They're happy with their employer. I don't like it when government gets involved between employees and employers. I have employees that work for me. It's really interesting to think that we have to have the government get in the middle of negotiating or a union. Look, people can leave if they're not happy with their job. There's lots of jobs in California. And I think that the really what people need to know is that we have a great relationship with our employees. We want them to stay. We want them to buy a home, put their kids through school, all those things, because you're only as good as your employees. As a business owner, I know that. And I have great people that are taking care of my business for me right now while I'm doing what they say needs to be done in California. So I think that that bill is a bad bill. I know he's in a pickle because he's pro-union, and he's got Joe Biden is beating him up over it. So I think it's quite interesting, actually. Yeah,
you seem like you're being entertained by this. I mean, I am curious. You know, there's a lot of conversations, not just in this, but there's the fast food bill as well, about wage theft, but also just the treatment of employees. I think we've seen workers really kind of have a moment in terms of exercising their power. Since you are a farmer and you're so familiar with agriculture, like, what do you see would be a better approach to, or is there a problem to be solved at all? Like, are people in good positions, you think?
I don't believe that, we have to get government involved in those. As I stated earlier, you know, there's nobody that's bound to have to go to work for somebody. It's they choose to work for you. You want them and they have a skill set, and the market will bear what the market will bear. Inflation's going up every day. I mean, people can't afford eggs went up 36% last year. Milk, everything's going up. Well, I have to pay my employees more because everything's going up. So, and you have to compete because other businesses are offering, if they're skilled and they're good employees, community, we try not to make, we have a truce with each other because all it's doing is driving up the cost of labor. And we want people to have a good livable wage.
We are short on time, but you mentioned your wife took your place in the assembly. What are some issues you disagree on?
Yeah. What's like the biggest legislative fight you have?
So the first year was like 10 bills that, and I can't even remember which bills. I mean, and it's been fascinating. And this year it's even more. And so we got asked from some reporters about that. And, you know, my wife would say, he just doesn't know what he doesn't understand. And I'd say, well, you know, but, you know, she.
You can't
she,
say it, that. You can't say that.
It's great for conversation, but, you know, we have different opinions. And that's what I think we need more of in the legislatures. You can disagree, but we still raise our kids the same. We still love each other. Everything's awesome. Yeah. But we can disagree and we can move on with that. We have different opinions about different issues.
Do you have a no dinner party or no dinner time, like legislative debate rule?
No, I think more people like to poke at us about it. And we just move on. I mean, in everyday life, we have disagreements about what we should do. And we've been married 23 years. We're happily married.
Awesome. All right. Senator Brian Deli, thank you so much for coming on today.
Absolutely. If you want to find out more about me, you can go to briandeli.com.
All right. Check it out. That is going to do it for this edition of Political Breakdown. We're a production of KQED Public Radio. Guy Marzorati is our producer and Jim Bennett is our engineer.
He is indeed. I'm Scott Schaefer. You can find me on Twitter. I'm @ScottSchaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. Follow me on Twitter @MLagos. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.